Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Anna Beth Robertson, 4 years of career experience, an engineer slash relief officer with Starkville Fire Department in Mississippi. Firefighting was never on Anna's radar. She has family members in the emergency service field, but only working in the office setting. It wasn't until one day a member with Starkville mentioned to Anna to come and train with them during their workouts. After a few sessions, one of the members asked, "When are you going to have your set of turnout gear?" Which got the wheels spinning for Anna, and she never looked back. The thing about mentors is sometimes you don't even know you have one in your life. Mentors can help you grow as a person and achieve any goal that you put your mind to. And I personally believe the way Anna was raised and the mindset she has towards the fire service, she will undoubtedly be a mentor to others. With that, I present Anna Beth Robertson.
My name is Anna Beth Robertson. I am currently on with Starkville Fire Department. I'm a four-year career firefighter that recently promoted to an engineer. And my story of how I got onto the fire service, I really didn't ever plan on being a firefighter, but I worked at a gym pre-COVID across from our hospital, and I knew I wanted to be something medical initially. My whole family did medical jobs, but they're in a office of some sort. And I was like, I want to do something that's not in an office. I have to do stuff that's hands-on. And being at that gym, I would see, you know, the ambulances go by, and eventually, like, the firefighters started coming to our gym. And at first, I was like, okay, I could be an EMT. I could work on an ambulance. And each day I would work out, you know, the firefighters would start coming into our gym, maybe some of the EMTs. And during my workout, my current training officer, who had no idea who I was, came up to me and he was like, you know, when you really feel like working out, you can come to my gym. And that just like sparked something in me, like a challenge. I was like, I thought I was really working out, but I'll go try this out. So I started working out with him and some of the other guys at his gym. And there was a couple of guys training for smoke diver. So, like, I got to see them in their gear doing all this hard stuff. And one of the guys asked me, since I was, like, starting to be a regular, he was just like, when are you going to have your set of turnout gear? And my brain started spinning. I was like, you know, maybe I could be a firefighter. At the time, I thought that was a crazy idea, I guess, because no one in my family has been a firefighter. I'm a female. That is absolutely absurd. I don't know if I'll be able to do it. But eventually I decided I wanted to take it on. I asked for a set of turnout gear probably a year before I tried out. And I just worked out in it all the time. And I guess the challenge of that really drug me in. So I tried out. And after that, you know, I loved it. So that's kind of how I got into the fire service, was because somebody called me out in the gym one day.
All right. All right. So with that being said, that initial push got you to, you know, walk through the threshold. So what steps did you take to prepare yourself? And was Starkville the first place to say yes, or did you apply to any other places?
So I only applied to Starkville. Again, in my brain, this is absurd. So let me just start in my hometown. So I had Brian Arnett, who was my gym coach slash training officer. And I think one of the steps that he gave me to getting on or being ready was just like that tough love. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, you're going to do great. No, you got this. It was, if you want to do this, you are going to put in XYZ to get the job done. And we are not going to treat you differently because you are female. Like, you're going to get treated like everybody else. You got to run that mile and a half. You got to be able to do the physical fitness test. And we're not going to sugarcoat anything for you. You've got to be able to do this. So I guess, you know, that was a really important step that helped me out. And getting that gear ahead of time, I had one step ahead of everybody else in my class. Okay. Nobody getting gear a year before their trial, let alone working out. Most people show up the day of They go run their mile and a half and they get through the test and then they end up being in gear and they dip out. That step too, like being able to acquire a pair of, way too big turnout gear, raggedy, but and then wearing a super old SCBA mask that you couldn't breathe out of definitely gave me a leg up on some other people. So along with just like my regular lifting plus getting in gear plus running, that is what I did to prepare for trial day.
Okay. And then I'm assuming when trial day came, you pretty much smoked it.
Yes, like I was fine. We have to do a mile and a half in 14 minutes, and I did it in 11. And then we had an agility test or obstacle course. You have to drag the, rescue Randy, those hoist. And at the time, like I had been dragging a dummy. I'd never drug that Randy before. So I was a little nervous about that. But like now it's funny to look back to even think I was nervous about that, because that's just part of the job. Like you do it every day, either training or, maybe you get a grab or whatever. But I definitely was nervous about that when I was trying out. And then at the end of it, you do a pattern in our heat building, which was also so brand new. And like I was so nervous about, you're just crawling around in a blacked out mask trying to get out of a building. So I had a little bit, like I said, a leg up, and I knew what was gonna happen, and I practiced it, but still, I was pretty nervous when I was doing all of it.
Okay. All right. So you make it, you pass. Did you have to go through some sort of like abbreviated or full-blown rookie school, or because I'm sure you had to get all your classes. So what was that like?
So sometimes we do things a little backwards. I'm pretty sure I was getting checked off to drive before I was even a rookie, or before I went through rookie school. So I think by 6 months I was learning to drive and like get checked off, and then we did an in-house rookie school that was about 13 weeks long if you didn't have hazmat. If you added, it was about 7. So that was in-house. That was when we were also on our 24/48 schedule. You would come to work or school from 7 to 5. And then if you were on shift that day, you didn't get to go home. You go to work. And then the next day, you get off, but you go straight back to rookie school, which I was kind of blessed. I had a home close to what the station I was at. So I got to go home and like take little naps during lunch and stuff. But yeah, I got through rookie school. And once I like as soon as I got out of rookie school, I think I was an acting sergeant at an outlying station. So things moved very quickly.
Okay. All right. Now, with that being said, can you tell the listeners about Starkville Fire Department? How many stations, personnel, apparatus, things of that nature?
Right now we have 4 active stations. We have about 58 people, and we've probably run only 2,000 calls a year. And a good bit of those are medical. So we are required to be nationally certified EMTs before. Well, I got mine before I even tried out, just because I knew that was a step. But most of the guys, you come on, they put you through EMT school. If you don't pass, then you're out. So we are all nationally recognized, not all, most of us are all nationally recognized EMTs since we are majorly running medical calls with a handful of fires.
Okay. And are do you guys transport? Or are you ALS, BLS?
So we have Pafford that is in the station with us. They are not Starkville Fire Department, they're their own company.
Okay.
They transport. We do not. So we're doing BLS type stuff, the firefighters. And then as far as the ambulance, there's going to be a paramedic and an EMT on that ambulance. And they do the more advanced stuff. And they just started transporting. So.
And how many what's your minimum staffing across all your apparatus?
About 16.
So you got at least four or three on each truck.
At least three.
At least three. Okay, so all right. Got
Lucky
you.
engines are typically going to be three, and then our ladder trucks, sometimes you get four or five, but really you're looking at three or four.
Okay. And what's Starkville's first alarm assignment consist of? Are you getting all four stations if it's within the city limits, or is it only like two and one, three and one?
If we depend on the district or whatever, you're sending two engines and a ladder truck. Maybe. It kind of depends, like I said, what the district is, because that fourth truck has to go to station one and like man that station. So on scene, we really are only having maybe 11 people, maybe 12.
Okay.
So yeah, we have to learn how to get all these jobs done with a low amount of people.
Okay. And do you guys have automatic aid, mutual aid coming in for a structure fire? Or is it only Starkville?
Only Starkville unless we need them. So like we
Okay.
best mutual aid. I think we had an apartment complex here in Starkville that burnt down a couple of years ago, and obviously like we got Columbus, like surrounding areas, mutual aid from the volunteers, you know. We got the people to come in because we weren't fighting it by ourselves. But it's not standard for them to come to every structure fire. But if we do need them, we can request them. And if they do need us, they can request us to come to the county for a
Okay.
fire. And serious.
Okay. All right. I definitely want to ask you this question because my department is going through this here very shortly. So, we work currently 24/48. We are going to 48/96. So, just me saying, I've talked to a lot of individuals and they've all said the 24/48. In layman's terms, it sucks,
Yeah.
right? But I am not a fan. I'm willing to try it, but I am not a fan of like, I have to be at a fire station for 2 days. I have to be home. I have to be away from home for 2 days. Granted, you get four off. And for me, I actually have that luxury because I do not work a part-time job. So 4 days off for me is really 4 days off. So with that being said, what are the pros and cons of the schedule and how was that transition for you?
So when I got hired, we were 24/48. And this is going to be a little different for me because like I am by myself. I'm not going home to a family. I get to do whatever I want on my 2 days off, you know? So I might have a little different perspective versus somebody that has to go home to a family or they're away from their family. But like you said, 24/48 in my brain equaled sucked. Just because you come for one day and then the next day you get off, you're probably like recouping and take a nap, get your stuff ready, go work out, whatever you do. And then that next day you're getting ready for work and you go straight back. So there's like never a period of just downtime.
Right.
You're always going, going, going. And I don't think you're getting that recovery physically or mentally that you need before you go back to work. We did the survey for 48/96. And we did a test period. And at the beginning, you know, there were a lot of guys that were skeptical about it. You know, they don't want to be away from home, like you said, for 2 days. And what about, you know, side jobs and schedules with that? But after our, you know, period of just trying it out, like everybody was on board. The 48/96, yeah, you're at work for 2 days, but typically as long as you're not like a lazy station or the retirement home, you're going to be doing stuff those 2 days. And it goes by pretty quick. And then, like you said, you get off and you have 4 days. If you don't work another job, you have those 4 free days, be with your family, you know, go work another job. You have a more consistent schedule to give people instead of, hey, I gotta go to work, then I have 2 days, and then I'm going straight back to work. I can give you 4 days of my time.
Right.
And I think that's, like I said, I don't have to work another job. But if I did, it would be easier for me to get a job with those straight 4 days than I think for 2 days.
Right.
And another thing, like the recovery and just the rest that you need. I think you get more of it on those 4 days off, and you're not just running, 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 even maybe with kids and a family. And I haven't looked, like, I've seen some of the charts and stuff, like the amount of mornings you're home with your kids and
Right,
stuff.
right.
Like, you get to be that dad that takes them to school those 4 mornings and pick them up as if you're not working a second job, whatever your schedule is. So I think it's pretty beneficial. It's definitely, to me, it was better than the 24/48. And that's coming from a single person that doesn't have the family worry about. But even for somebody that does have their family and they do have that second job, I feel like it has been more beneficial than the 24/48.
Right. I mean, and obviously you must have coworkers that have family, that have kids. And like you said, you guys did a test trial, and after a test trial, it passed. So something's right about it. And that's what I hear. That's why I said I'm a little skeptical, but firemen don't like change, but I'm willing to give it a shot. And I hear it all the time. Like people say, bro, once you go to that, you'll be like, why did we ever do 24/48s?
Yes, and this can go into that wellness topic later, but like that rest, that mental rest you get just being at home for those 4 days, you're ready to come back to work. It's like you get a vacation every time you get off, you have 4 days, which is literally what I usually do. I'm traveling a lot, so when I get off, I don't have to use swap days or vacation days because I have 4 days off. So if I want to grab, my family up and go to what, 2 hours away to some beach or something, like we can easily get it done.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, you're working it, so I'm taking your word for it. Like I said, we start it soon, and you're not the that's the thing. I've talked to many, many, many people, and they're all saying, I'm telling you, 4896 or the 2472s. But either way, the whole consensus every single time was you'll never go back to 2448.
Oh no, I don't. And we do, like you said, we have guys that have those side jobs. They have their own. My lieutenant, he has a roofing business. Some of the guys are construction workers. Like, they have those 4 days. They can be at their job site with their guys actually doing something, doing a 24. And then they have 2 days to go to work and be with their family and get, errands done. It just seems, like I said, I would never go back to 24/48. It seems better on this side of things, but I don't fully understand not being in that same shoes as somebody that does have the family and the second job. But coming from my perspective, it's great.
Okay. All right. With that being said, so what was it like? Was it surreal on your first day coming into shift?
It was definitely weird because, I was stupid when I asked this question. I was doing my 2 week orientation. So you still get to go home at night, obviously. You're just there 7 to 8 during this period. And then on the last couple of days, you may go straight on to shift. And I remember I asked my lieutenant, like after we got done with orientation that day, I went on shift that night. And I asked him, I was like, well, do I need to bring my gear with me? And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, you're on the truck now. Yes, you need your gear. So, like, my brain had not gotten into that mode yet, I guess. But it was weird because you're coming into a job where you spend the night. It's not just I
Right.
wake, go to work, I come home at 5 o'clock, I sleep in my own bed. You are with this group of people for 24 hours or 48. So I had to learn, well, I need to bring food, I need to have these clothes, and I need to make sure I have this and this and this for, a whole day away from home. So it was a little crazy, and just like running that first serious call. Like, you've been trained to do this. You go, like, I had EMT already, so I'd practice all these trauma scenarios on dummies and stuff. And I'd been through my 2 week orientation going into the burn building, and then they tone you out and you're going to a gunshot. And you're like, whoa, me
Right.
reading this gunshot? And then you sit back and you're like, yeah, you're 911 now. You're the one that has to take care of them. You have had the training, you are capable, you get it done. So it was a weird feeling. being on shift that first couple of times and like experiencing the things that I experienced.
Okay. Definitely surreal. I mean, it's like the amount of responsibility you have. You're like, I get to do this, but then you look back at it and you're like, I get to do this. Like, this is more than a job.
Yeah, and I've had that conversation with my training officer. I'll probably mention him a lot because he's basically my dad who has raised me in my adult life. But we had that talk like, not everybody can do this job because of the things that you are responsible for and the things that you do encounter. You cannot, I guess you can, but being able to go to these scenes and being composed while there's this chaos and trauma going around you, and you're capable of like getting this serious job done where you're doing a chest seal or like you said, somebody got their head shot into. Not everybody's capable of that job. And me and him had that conversation pretty early on, is you get to do this and you're it's like a blessing or like a gift you have to be able to do this job. And maybe it affects you a little bit, but you're able to handle it more than somebody else that can't.
No, he's right. He's right. He's definitely setting you up for success. And that, in my eyes, that lieutenant you keep talking about, that's a mentor. And sometimes you don't even really realize, or he might not even realize, like what he's doing for you and how it's shaping your mindset towards your future.
Yeah, I've thought about that too. It's like, because even pre-trial, like even when I was just in his gym, I swear he had like this psychological game that he would play that he could get me like very motivated to do things. And when the tough love needed to be there, he knew to do it. Very mentor level type guy. And yeah, I'm very blessed that that's who got me started in this career, because if it wasn't, I don't know how I would have gotten all this done.
Right. Okay. And another thing that kind of sparked my interest when I heard, and it's amazing how certain departments will do what they have to do. And you mentioned how you pretty much got like checked off before, so obviously there is a need for the firefighters coming in to, hey, we need you to learn how to drive. We understand, I'm sure most departments don't want to like immediately do that, but department's got to do what they got to do. So how was that like when they're like, all right, we're going to teach you how to drive this thing?
Yeah, also weird because I never drove a big truck. I've been in a little bitty car or something like that, and I think I was there for maybe 3 months and I started having to drive a fire truck and learn how to pump it and everything. And the first day I ever drove a fire truck, I didn't know about, how to turn, and especially right turns, they get pretty. I definitely hit a stop sign. Like that, it came out of nowhere and I swiped it. And then I was with that lieutenant that I keep mentioning, and I had to go do paperwork or whatever. And he's like, okay, get back in the seat and you get to go make that same turn again. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I don't want to go do that. But it helped me, end up being a good driver, because you get put into this opportunity to be a driver very quick. And you have to learn how to drive quick, and you have to learn how to actually be an engineer, not just pump a truck, pull a lever. You've got to know how to do all this stuff. So, yeah, that getting thrown into that position again with that more responsibility was kind of surreal too. But it prepares you for when you actually get to promote. Like, you were a firefighter for a little bit of time, and you end up being an acting sergeant for a long period of your firefighting career before you come an engineer or a relief officer. So it's nice, kind of, but at the same time, like, all I want to do is fight fire. On some of the calls, like, I had to be on a pump panel and I didn't get to fight fire and be a firefighter. So that's probably the one downside about it. But we did have to, like you said, you got to do what you got to do. And we don't have a lot of people, and our firefighters are just constantly turning over. And then we need drivers at the same time. So as soon as you get those new guys in, they got to learn how to drive and go pump and drive a fire truck.
Can you remember what your first fire was like?
So people had talked about, sometimes you can sleep through the tones. And I was like, that's crazy. There's no way I'm sleeping through one of these tones. I can barely sleep as it is. And I guess I got comfortable at the station I was at. I was on the Sprint truck and I got woke up by lights flickering because I slept through the tone. And I walked out there, and it was a fire alarm or something. I'm getting dressed and the officer of the Sprint truck kind of just looked at me and he's like, "Do you know we're going to right now?" And I was like, "I don't know. I have no idea what we're doing." He's like, "We have a structured fire, like fully involved. We need to speed up." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is it." Show up. I think we were third truck and get there. And like, as you're pulling up, like this whole house is just on fire. And I was just staring at it like it's glorious, like you're so excited to go do your job. And we got there and since I don't even think I was checked off by this point. I mean, I wasn't a certified firefighter. I was still in rookie school. So when I pull up, I don't get to go in, but I just sat on like a 2.5 on the outside spraying water. And then I got to do overhaul, which I thought was the coolest thing ever. And people are complaining, that have been there a long time. They're like, "I don't want to pull ceiling and sheetrock and all this stuff." And I'm just in the, I was loving having that pipe fall, like best day of my life. First call was pretty awesome. I didn't get to do a whole lot of work, but
Right.
I still loved it. So
Right. Right. And everyone has those steps. You're like, you're learning. Some organizations are going to do things differently. In your case, you have to wait to get all your certifications and then you're allowed to get in. While other departments, they run a full-blown rookie school. That way, your first day, you're definitely firefighter certified. You might not be EMT certified. So it's just, I like hearing the different perspectives on how different organizations work.
yeah.
So the biggest thing with me, which is, I love talking to individuals. So of course, everybody knows you're female, okay? You're a female in a male-dominated profession. So what is that like? When you told your family, "Hey, I want to do this," were they like, "Let, think about it and, really see if that's what you want to do?" But like, I truly want to hear from a female's perspective what it's like to be a female firefighter and what does it mean to you to have the title of firefighter?
So I was raised by some very independent, strong women, and whether they know it or not, they prepared me to be in a position that I'm in right now. But when I did tell them I wanted to be a firefighter, they were like, "Ain't no way. You are not running into burning buildings. That is not safe, that whole thing." I'm like, whether you know it or not, you led me to this just from what I was raised on. Being a female firefighter.
I want you to keep it true to yourself. Like,
Yeah.
if you need to let it fly, let the, because there are things that need to be said, but I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt
Hey,
you.
you're good. I guess the way that I was brought into this career, I never knew there was a difference in the female and male firefighter, just from the way that I was treated. So all I knew was I have to get XYZ done, and I am able to do that, so I'm a firefighter. I didn't know, and I think every job has like the good cowboys and the bad cowboys, and there are those females and males that they out and they get hired on, and you're just like, "Why are you here?" That a very bad reputation, and that was kind of the place I was in when I got hired is. There was no females at all. It was just females that were like coming and going because they were trying to turn the male dominated field into a female dominated field. And you can't do that coming in as a female. Like it is a male dominated field. You have to learn to be a male, in quotations, I'll say male firefighter, because you can't make this job female. So I really didn't know a difference. I just knew I had that title. And when I got hired on, I had another female that tried out with me. And then I think we had one more. I don't know if she was full time at the point or if she was still part time. But for a while, we had three full time female firefighters, and like every news station wanted to come do a story on us. And at that point, I had been like, it was just months in, I think, not even a year. So I'm sitting there like, what have I done to be in the news? Like, I'm just a female. But now it's like there is a lot of things, like not just physically, but mentally, like you've got to be tough on both ends. And the fact that you are a female being able to do this job is a big deal. Because there are like younger girls, they don't think they can be a firefighter. I didn't think I could be one at 26 or 19, however old I was. Like, that was just not in my thought process. That could not even be a thing. So being able to have the title of a firefighter and being successful and being able to do that job, like, sets a standard for these other females that you can do it. The only bad thing is, you know, it was after we did all these news stories and being in the paper and stuff, like, you had females that tried out that they weren't worth anything. So you're getting these females that come in because they see what you're doing, but they aren't capable of doing the job. So, and sometimes they could get through the trial process, but then they just want to be there because you get all the attention. Because you do, even if you don't want the attention. Like, every time I have had to be in the news or be in the paper, you know, you don't want to do it because you don't want special treatment. But there are, and I call it the trophy female, there are those females in certain departments that are just there to be that trophy female that creates diversity for the department. And maybe standards get lowered for them so that they can stay. And lucky for me, like, that it, the people I was raised under did not allow that to happen. It was always very tough. And like, this is, you are going to be able to do this, and we will not lower the standard. You will not have a, some women don't even have to try out for their department because they know the right people. So you're lowering your standards to create this kind of diversity or whatever, or just to have a female. So I'm glad that the people that I was raised under getting into this job, they did not let anything get lowered for me. And that I do have this platform now to talk to other females about, you know, don't just go because you're going to get the attention. Like, if you want to be a firefighter and you have passion for the job, go do it because you can. But you have got to put in the work to get there. You cannot just be, people cannot sugarcoat things for you just to get you through this job.
That's a fact. And that goes with anything too. It doesn't matter male or female. You know, you got some areas of the country that are looking for specific races. And it's like, me personally, I cannot stand that. I just want to do the job. And one thing I say to other people, and when I say it, they're like they kind of look at me like, oh, this dude's serious. Like, I knew coming into this field that it was a white male dominated profession. And I'm 100% okay with that. Like, I know I was in the oven a little longer. I'm a little bit more baked than most. And it's like, I don't want that as an excuse to, oh, well, we want this guy. We want to meet. I don't like the quotas. If as true firemen, all they care about, they want someone in, they want someone on their truck or their ambulance or whatever that they ride that cares for the job and can do the job. We do not care race, creed, gender, religion. Most. Now, there are bad apples in every profession. So you are going to come across that asshole that is going to be negative towards you because he doesn't like the way you look. And like I said, there are bad apples everywhere. But the majority of the fire service, all we care about is, hey, does this person have my back when shit hits the fan?
Yes. And I've had to, I say that to a lot of people too when I have to do like a news article or something TV wise, you know, if when shit hits the fan, you just got to be able to do it. You said like every department has that bad apple, and it kind of like sparked something in me, or lit something off in my brain. I guess going back to being the female, like even when you are capable and you are showing and you prove yourself time and time and time again, you still have those bad apples that do not want you there. Like they want you on that bad call, but they do not want you at that department. So, and I tell people, like, I have my little support system, you know, because even though like 95% of the department's on your side and they're supporting you, that 5% is so loud in your brain. Coming in as a female or whatever, you already are doubting yourself. I'm a 5'2" little girl that, you know, just looking at me, you don't think maybe that I could do the job. So like I'm doubting myself straight off the bat. And then, you know, you do prove yourself over and over and over and over again through the years, and you still have these people that say, that's not enough, that's not enough, that's not enough, that's not enough. And that 5% of the negativity just really can beat you down if you don't have that support system that you've established.
That's true. That's true. So, with that being said, what advice can you give out to male counterparts that find out or know like they're gonna have a female coming into their station, onto their truck, onto their crew? What kind of advice can you give to those? Because, you know, for me, it was a learning curve for me because I had never worked with a female. Like I said, the current truck I have now, we have a female in there. And I had to adjust. Like I watched her through our academy program, and she was badass. Like I told her at one point, and she can definitely attest this. I pulled her to the side, and I was like, "Hey, whatever you're doing, keep doing it, because people are looking at you in a good way. Like she's a fighter, she's a bulldog. She will go to work, and she won't complain. She just wants to be treated fairly like everybody else."
I think it's that simple. Like, if you get a female on your truck, whatever you do with your rookies or your probies, like, you just do that with her. There's no special treatment you have to do. There's like, it doesn't become this complicated process. You have a female on your truck, or you can just say, hey, I have a firefighter, I have a rookie coming at my station. Like, you put her through the same stuff that you would put your other rookie or probie through, male or female. I guess, like, this is just a funny story, and I don't know if it relates to this, but it popped into my brain. Being a female coming onto a male truck, me and this other girl that tried out together, we went through our orientation process together. We don't have male and female bathrooms. Like, we have an officer bathroom, and then we have the dorm bathroom because everybody's always been men. So, like, you don't have to worry about having two bathrooms. So as far as we knew, that was our bathroom. But apparently there's this rule, like you use the officer bathroom. And so we're in there, you know, we are using the men's bathroom. And apparently there was like a male in the stall, and he went to his officer and he's like, there's girls in the bathroom. What do we do about that? Because we just thought like that's how it was supposed to be. Just that was like, you're here in this job. Everybody uses a dorm bathroom. So may I guess from the male perspective, like that's something that might be weird too, like you do, because you are living at these stations, y'all are sharing a dorm together, and now there's a female here. But I guess you just have to, like I said, it's the same as having like a female or a male coming on to your station, and it might be a little different in some aspects, but you treat them the same. Like you can still do pranks on them and, you know, train them the same way. I think it starts becoming a problem when you want to specialize the treatment for a female coming onto a truck.
Definitely, definitely. And one thing I would say too is for the male counterparts, you got to feel them out too. You know what I mean? Because like guys are going to be guys, so like dirty jokes or a
Oh,
joke
yeah.
that might be, you know, like so you have to test the waters. And you like for me, I literally asked my, you know, I asked Shelby like, "Hey, like I curse a lot, so it's like, does that bother you?" Or like you can't just, as soon as they walk in, start dropping, because that can get you in trouble potentially. So my advice is also go and talk to them and go, "Hey, like, are you okay with this?" Find out what they like, because you know that way it's comfortable environment for everybody.
That was definitely something. And I think my situation is a little bit different because I was around all the guys like a year prior. So, like, they figured out real quick that they may say a dirty joke, but I'm about to up you like 10 times more. And there wasn't really a figuring out period. But that is a good point. Like, say you do get this brand new female firefighter and y'all are telling dirty jokes and, crossing that line, maybe you need to maybe sit down, like you said, and just be like, what are you comfortable with? What are you not comfortable with? This is how we typically are. And that might be the only thing I would suggest changing is if she wasn't comfortable with that, because you will have the female that takes that one little comment and you're at HR. But I think that's one of those things I told myself was, that's how this job, that's the environment. You don't have to just be like dropping dirty jokes and cuss words all the time, but like it's gonna happen. And if your feelings get hurt that quick and you run to HR, like there's your reputation. So.
I'm glad you said it. I didn't want to say it, but like it's one of those things, you know. HR will never truly understand our job
No.
and the way we cope and the way we act, because I think a part of it is our defense mechanism for what we see. You know, like we can run a terrible call and then somebody will make a joke out of it to get laughter going because of what we've seen. But for HR, they'd be like, oh my God, that is terrible. Like something needs to be done. It's because they don't understand it. But I love that you hit it. Don't be, even guys too, don't be that guy to run the HR and instead have that conversation with your crew, like, hey, I just want you to know, like, that was a little bit. And then that way they will learn, like, okay, now if it continues to happen, I get it. But yes, you hit it on the nail. Don't be the one to just immediately go run because everything that you are trying to do will be undone.
We played a prank. Like I was on the sprint truck for a while with this one guy, and there was, the cussing and the dirty jokes, and I'd been there for months. So like I understood it. It was normal. And I went up to my battalion chief one day and I was like, I think we could play a prank on him and say that he has to go to HR for sexual harassment. And so we played that, like he had to go to chief's office, and chief was like, well, you said this in front of her, and now she's filing for sexual harassment. And oh gosh, he freaked out, like completely went white. Obviously, I did not care. Like, I'd already been joking too at this point, and I understood that environment, but I was like, we could so get him. So that's all I've done with HR is like, I will prank some of the new guys because, like, they'll open up their mouth a little quick and they don't really adapt to people's personalities. And but just let it all start flying off the rip. And, he was kind of doing that. So I was like, we could definitely prank him pretty good right now.
Definitely. Okay. All right. I love it. I love it. As far as, and this is your opinion, the recruitment and retention, what do you see the fire department can improve on, and what do you think fire departments are doing good on when it comes to those two topics?
So that's something that we are working on. Like very hard right now is how do we get people to stay? How do we recruit, period, to get people to stay? Because we have a 2-week orientation like twice a month, maybe 3 times a month, or that's only gonna be twice because it's 2 weeks. But we do, it's always like open door, just in out, in out, in out, with new guys. So I think at least in our surrounding areas, like they'll campaign pretty well on their websites, and you might make this pretty little picture with the fire and you say all these benefits you have and what your schedule is, and you really bold that 4896. But that's something that we have never done and that we're trying to do now. Like they're trying to get City Hall to come up with this nice little thing to post, to try to recruit people. We go to colleges and they have recruit days. Not just for the fire department, but maybe armies there and police and, all these different types of people to try to recruit people. Go to high schools and talk to people. Go to those sports teams at the high schools and colleges specifically, because typically, if you have the athlete, they know how to balance like the physical aspect and the school aspect, and they typically end up being a good recruit. So that's what we do. And what we do plan on doing is, campaigning better. And as far as retention, like you have to create that environment that people want to be in to a point. Because we do have, and I bet everybody has it, like you do have that retirement home, or you do have that lazy station, and you get a new firefighter there who's ready to go, you know, let's train all day, let's do all this stuff, and then they do nothing. So then they leave because they're like, I thought I was gonna drag hose and throw ladders and fight fire and go on EMS calls, and I'm doing nothing. Or we're sitting around playing video games all day. So that's something that we're trying to work on too, is really having a universal culture and not cultures at each station. Everybody wants to train. We're gonna be active. We're gonna have family time. You know, make it an environment and a standard that is going to want to have that very specific firefighter stay instead of just having a warm body that we got, and then they realize they had to do hard work and now they're out the door.
Right. Or that motivated, aggressive firefighter turns into a slug because that's all they're around. And, you know, it goes on in my organization. You hate to see it. And the fix, if I knew the fix, I'd be a millionaire. So I get you.
You see it all the time, and you can't really do anything about it because if you are a small department and that's the only station they can go to, because you have new guys at the main station having to learn, and then you got shipped out to this outlying station that does nothing. The only, I guess I say, you can't do nothing, but because I've been at those stations, and the thing that I had to do was go outside, get my gear myself. If I wanted to train on something, I just pulled hose out. Like, there was no asking because you probably ain't going to get to go nowhere other than the grocery store. And if you wanted to do some kind of training, you need to get out there and do it yourself. So that's really the only thing I can say to people that do end up getting at that or being that motivated firefighter and going to that slug station. You have to end up just being your best friend and doing it by yourself.
That's true. That's facts. Love it. Okay. All right. So at what point did promotion come into play? Because
Let's see. So it's January. Promotions were back in September. And so our promotion process is not where it should be right now. And our training officer is doing a great job to fix that. But our promotion process going into engineer was a mile and a half run, a full citywide territory test, a written test, and then an interview. There was no skill. You didn't have to pump a truck. You didn't like nothing. It was just go run in the amount of time, and that gave you points. And then if you do really well on the test, you get a certain amount of points. And then your interview, you get a certain amount of points. So that was kind of the process that it was me and two other guys. We went through that process. You do all that the first day, and then the second day, like, you find out who has it after they've calculated points or whatever. And I kind of, you know, the mindset that I had going into promotions is you don't get ready the month before promotions. Like, you are staying ready for promotions. So I was going to these classes that weren't academy based. I was doing the training I needed to do. You know, you're doing your physical fitness so you're ready. You're studying your territory. You're not waiting until last minute. You're doing all these things to stay ready for promotions. So I'm, you know, spending money on these extra classes, learning what I got to learn, you know, practicing an interview and stuff. And I go into this promotion, and we all test. The run gave you, let's see, you got like 50 points if you maxed out the run, which was like 9:30 or 10 or something. And then it drastically dropped as the time went down. So I was already 20 points behind my counterparts just from a run. But on the test, got the highest. You did super well. Had the most amount of time, had the most amount of classes, and came in second. So that, I guess, was a hard pill for me to swallow, because the way that I'm going to take it, you know, coming in second is like, obviously I didn't do something right. I didn't do all the things that I was supposed to do. But you kind of wonder, like, or then that could be that negativity too, like, why did I go to all these classes then? Why am I learning all this stuff just to come in second place in a promotion? And you did all this stuff to get ready for it. But at the same time, you kind of have to sit there and you're not doing this just for a promotion. You're learning all these things for your citizens. It's not just for you, it's for them. So promotion, that process happened, second place on the list. And then at that point we had sergeants leaving left and right. So it took about a month until I had a seat. Like the guy that came in first got his seat. And then it might not even been a month. I think it was 2 weeks I got a seat. So that's how that went.
Okay. And so your role is you are mainly the driver operator, but if the captain's off, you slide over to that right front seat.
So we have one captain per shift and then everybody else is lieutenants. So like you'll go up to lieutenant. I couldn't do off, I mean I couldn't do captain. It would have to be a lieutenant that could ride up to captain. But yeah, so as soon as I got promoted to be a sergeant, like days after, I was already acting up as a lieutenant. So like this all moves very fast and you grab this next responsibility. And it's that same like when I started, I was a firefighter. I was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? And then you learn and you get really good. And then you become an engineer and you're like, oh my gosh, a lot more responsibility. How am I going to do this? You get really good, really confident. And it's just a really fast process for us because we are short staffed most of the time. And
Right.
we are always having that turnover and people leaving. And you have to become ready in a short amount of time. So that was another surreal moment. Being promoted to a sergeant, but technically have already been a sergeant for 3 years out of my four, and then immediately hopping into the lieutenant seat.
Right. Right. No, it's a lot, and that's how some departments have to operate. No fault of their own, but you got members leaving, and positions are becoming vacant. Whether they leave to go to a bigger department or they just leave the fire service altogether, like it's a lot that they ask of you. And I mean, you got to be ready to take that responsibility, and definitely you've knocked it out the park for sure.
I'm trying. I really hope that I am.
Well, I mean, like mentors, like you mentioned, that definitely plays a part and that definitely helps.
Yeah.
What does aggressiveness mean to you?
That, to me, it's just doing your job. Being a firefighter, like, you need to be aggressive. But that's an argument. I guess not an argument. Like, that's something very new to our department as well as being aggressive. Like we have a bunch of cornbread fed tough men get work done, but they don't understand. I won't say they don't understand, but it's a new concept to all of us right now. Like being aggressive as far as maybe like searching or something. Like we're pretty aggressive when it comes to making interior attack, but right now this whole year is literally structured around being aggressive in search. And I feel like everybody else is like way ahead of that, like other departments. And like we are just now starting on being aggressive in search and searching survivable space and really getting in there because we are good. Like we can go fight a fire and make a good stop. But then we're like, okay, well, now we need to search. So that's what our goal is for this next year is becoming aggressive in searching when probably to everybody else, what we're learning now is just normal. Like that's typical. I think that's just your job as a firefighter is you've got to be aggressive to you don't want to end up being reckless, but and that's kind of what we're getting into as well when we do these classes, like we're learning the difference between aggressive versus reckless.
Right. And no, you're not the only department, because I think as this information is spread out more and more through social media, departments are starting to catch on, or members in that department might be like, hey, what are we doing? And look at all this data. And so, no, I don't think you're behind the eight ball. I think there are a lot of other organizations that are in the same boat as you guys. And so now the education is being spread out, and you guys seem like you're willing to accept it. Where to me, yes, fire department's bread and butter skill should be finding the fire, extinguishing it, but also search goes hand in hand with that. Like, we have to be good at search. The only way to be good at it is to get the information, read the data, and start, going out in the field and practicing the way we're supposed to do it.
Yeah, and We've been going off of the first 4,000 rescues right now. That's kind of what our classes are about. And the big argument, like when I first got hired on, our argument was smoothbore versus fog nozzle. And that was a huge, debate and still kind of is. But then you read the data and you see that it keeps getting proven and proven and proven. Why not change it? Like I said, firefighters do not like change. So finally, we are getting people on board with smoothbore. Now it's searching ahead of a hose line, going in there, and you do not have to, in most situations, you do not have to have a hose line to go get a search done. So that's like the argument right now is, well, I'm not going ahead of a hose line, or I am going ahead of a hose line. That's what we're supposed to do. So that's kind of, I guess, the aggressiveness, mindset that we're trying to push in the department.
Okay. All right. And I'm assuming that you are a proponent for outside training, getting outside of your four walls and learning. To me, that's the only way you learn different things, different methods, different tactics.
Absolutely, especially with us, like our heat building is two Connex boxes with no furniture and just open spaces. So you get really used to searching these two big rectangle boxes with a fire exactly where you know it is. And you go in there and it's not realistic. Like there is no furniture. So we just recently got at one of our stations, we turned the upstairs into a little floor plan and there's couches and everything. And you send new guys in there. And they run into a couch and they're like, what the heck is that? That's a couch. You're in a house. Like, there's furniture. So, and that wasn't around when I first came in. So I started going to these other classes that were not in my academy, but going to Tennessee or Florida, North Carolina, like all these different classes. And, they have these huge heat buildings that actually are furnished out. And that was such a like eye-opener to me, how to actually search a house that has furniture in it and where those people might be in the house. Because a bad habit like we have with our department or used to have was when you searched, you were playing hide and seek. Like they would put somebody on the top shelf of, in the sink or in the toilet. Like that's not where they're going to be. So it was really nice to get out of that those four walls and like experience training at other places. And another thing is like we don't have a forcible entry prop. So you're not gonna do if you don't go to these other classes that have forcible entry props and you can do that, you're not gonna know how to do it. You can know kinda. We can kinda teach you, but we don't have a prop that you can run reps on. So I would go to these classes because I knew also I was gonna get better at forcible entry. I'm not gonna show up on scene and have a Halligan and an axe and be like, what do I do? So, yeah, I'm a huge proponent for getting away from your academy-based book training and try to get to these other classes at other departments and training with other guys and more realistic type things.
Love it. Love it. All right. The wellness side of the fire service. You said that was something you definitely wanted to hit on. So I'm gonna let you have it.
Well, I don't know. Whenever I saw the topic, I thought it would be something good to talk about because we have that physical fitness side. Like I said, we're all big, strong men and women that can lift things and get the job done. But what habits do we have when we leave our 48 or our 24 that are going to help us be ready to do this job? Because that was another like learning curve is I'm surrounded by all these people for 48 hours. And constantly you're having that dopamine hit. So for the 2 days you're on shift, you are having a huge high of dopamine. And the running joke for first responders and blue collars, we're running off of nicotine and caffeine as well. So along with having this huge dopamine high, we're coping with nicotine and caffeine. And I've done both, so like I'm not judging, but I understand it. And you get off work, and if you don't have that family to go to, and maybe even if you're going back to that family, like you have that drop. And if you don't have, and being big, tough men and women, we're not going to therapy and we're not talking about it. So, you get off shift and you have that physical fitness category down pat. But as far as wellness, you have that huge drop when you get home, or at least I've experienced this. And I had to learn, how to keep my day running and dealing with coming off that high from those calls or the high of being around all my people for 2 days. And, I looked this up whenever I was kind of looking at the topic of wellness, what is the suicide rate for general population versus firefighters? So general population is 13 per 100,000. For firefighters, it's 18 per 100,000. And that says a lot. That's a lot more people than the general population. And, maybe that's because of what we deal with, but, that's going to happen. The calls that we go to, the things that we experience, being there for each other, like actually truly being there for each other, and then maybe, thinking out of the box, hey, here's my therapist. Do you need to go talk to one? Or, I will be your therapist if you don't want to, go be weak and go talk to somebody. So I think that's a thing that we all struggle with is we create these coping mechanisms. We have the dark humor. We have these things that keep us going. But that wellness factor, like maybe you do need to go talk to somebody. Maybe you do need to see a doctor about getting medicated on something. Maybe you do need to do some yoga or something that so we can prevent these things happening. It was maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, a guy in our surrounding area, like he had committed suicide. He was about to go to rookie school the night before rookie school, and he committed suicide. So, and that can be anybody. Like that could be some drug. So what are you doing, not only for yourself, but hopefully it carries on to your other guys, because you don't know what their life is. You don't know what they're going through, what they deal with. If I come into work and I'm a complete asshole and I'm always down to my people, I'm not helping them in any way, wellness wise. So I really think that maybe that's something that our whole culture needs to start gearing towards is like, yes, we can be physically fit, we can get the job done, we can be aggressive, but like, how are we going to cope with it healthy when the day is said and done so that we can prevent these bad things happening to our brothers and sisters?
No, it's facts. And I think, there's different people out there, different agencies that are doing just that. I think we're slowly getting that wind, but I still think that there's a long road ahead because you have those that are like, I'm not doing that. Or if they see that, if they find out, or they hear, or they see that you're doing this, that, and the other, you're made fun of. Where to me, it's we see people's worst. We get called during their worst time possible, and those things will affect you. Some people are able to put that in a little compartment and they're able to keep it there and they're okay. But then at some point that cup overfills and you let it out. I different people I've talked to, you hear their upbringing or their history of like they went a period where it was terrible call after terrible call after terrible call. Like that takes a toll for sure.
I've had this talk with people at work, like there was a time period where there was like they would have to respond to suicide calls like every shift. And you're seeing that every shift. And, one of the guys was like, I almost went to therapy. Even if, like you said, most of us can take it and we can compartmentalize it, but at some point it is going to overflow. Like just make that a normal thing. Like, and you talk about how there's debriefing after serious calls, but we're not very good at having debriefings, and like actually say, hey, and we do have people that come and talk to us about PTSD, and it's typically a joke in the department. Okay. And they're just like, well, I don't have PTSD. None of us can have PTSD. That's stupid. No, like seeing neg there's research. The more negative or like traumatic things you're around, your brain is malleable, and those neural pathways, whether it's good or bad, they're going to strengthen towards what you practice the most. It's a muscle. So if you were constantly around traumatic thing after traumatic thing, like that muscle is getting bigger and bigger. And if you have nothing to cope with, then eventually that can be the reason that you end up in that statistic. So, and I don't, this kind of just popped into my head at the same time. One of the things that I'm a proponent of is like suffering together on shift, like doing things that are hard and your firefighter out there and tell them to do whatever. Like, we are all going to get together and we're about to do something stupid just for the fun of it. And it's going to suck, but we're not going to quit. And I think that maybe that's a good thing to do with your shift, just so you know, like, you're not the only one suffering. Everybody's going to do it together. And if you think you're about to quit, you have people that are telling you, do not do it.
Right.
I think that can apply to out of the job as well.
No, that's fact. That's fact for sure. There's no greater feeling than, sharing the good times with your crews, but then also everybody suffering together, during those bad times, because it keeps that camaraderie, it keeps that trust, that buildup of communication together. So I agree with you on that.
Absolutely.
I always like to ask the guests at the end of the interview, where would you like to see yourself? I know you're fairly young, you got a long career ahead of you, but like, where would you like to see yourself at some point?
Gosh, yeah. Right now, I am very young in the career and I'm learning a lot. Like, I thought that maybe in the first 2 years, you get most of your learning out of the way and then you just have like little touch ups. But like, I feel like I didn't grow up until I turned 26. Like, that is the year, like, I was sitting there. I'm like, I think I'm going to grow up this year. Like, I think I'm actually going to become an adult because I'm learning a lot still. And there's all these opportunities for growth, good and bad. So I guess where I would like to see myself is just, keep growing to where, like, as you're moving up through the ranks and you become a lieutenant or you become a captain or you become a battalion chief, like, hopefully I get to the point where, like, I just feel super capable and like I've grown and I'm able to lead and be take care of all these responsibilities that are underneath me. Really, just to be a good leader. Like, that is where I want to be. Like, I want to be able to, as a firefighter, I tried to lead from the bottom and go up these ranks, and like, you just want to be a good, solid mentor and leader and not become like one of the slugs that you hated being under. So that's probably very generic, but I think just as I keep moving up through the fire service, just keep learning and learning how to be the best leader I can be for the people that are under me.
Very well said. Okay. And any advice to any girls out there that, I mean, I don't care whether it's a white male, black male, Asian male, Hispanic male, white female, black female, whatever the case may be, man, anytime you have like community relations, interactions, those little kids that look up to the firefighters and like see, like, wow, their parents might be like, hey, you could do that someday. What advice do you have for especially females out there that are looking to get into the position but are a little timid?
You definitely need to learn how to balance that feminine masculine type teeter totter, because sometimes you're told just be one of the guys, but then I think you kind of lose who you are a little bit being a female in the fire service. So you have to learn when you can use your more emotional side and like you can help out and be more feminine, and then when to put on that tough skin and be more masculine. And that's something that I've probably learned in the last year and a half is like, and this is definitely stereotypical, but I feel sometimes we're a little bit more emotional or we can take things more personal. And that's what I was doing, was if something happened, I was taking it very personally. So I had to learn, it's not personal. And to handle my emotions properly, because that's definitely something that the higher ups are going to look at you about is, if I give you a task in a stressful environment, are you going to freak out? So just learning how to be emotionally intelligent and finding that tough skin to put on, I think those are two things that I would say to a young female that was wanting to try out that you need to. It's definitely very different, like being around males a majority of the time, so you've got to find that tough skin and not take everything so personal and not, run and go tell somebody whatever. But if you do need to have a talk, like, do it in an adult manner. Have those face-to-face conversations. Don't just run and cry for help. Like you can have that man-to-man conversation as well, being a female. So I think that's what I would tell other women.
Okay. Love it. Love it. I knew this would be good. See, told you. Anna, I gotta say thanks. Seriously. Thanks for accepting the invite. You don't know how, like I told you earlier before we recorded, how many women I've reached out to, and it's like they feel like I'm trying to catfish them or scam them. And I'm like, well, I'm legit. Here are two links you can go and see. But like I really appreciate you coming on and like laying down the gospel. Like, no, I really enjoyed this interview, and I hope it was as comfortable for you as it was for me.
Yeah, again, I'm very blessed to have this opportunity. I didn't ever realize that I would have this opportunity. Like even following your page, like I would see these people get posted and doing their podcasts. I was like, that'd be cool one day. And then it happened. I was like, wow, this is crazy. I'm thankful that you were able to give me this opportunity.
No, definitely, definitely. And it's funny how different people react the same way. Like, I'll either call them if I get their number, or I'll send them a message, and then they'll be like, holy shit, like, for real? Like, really me? Why me? Like, all the people you've had. And I'm like, all those people I have, you fit. Everybody has a place. Like, so many people get hung up on the name of the individual that I had. But listen, everybody got it. Everybody started somewhere, so they made a name for themselves. So you can too. But I truly appreciate you coming on doing this. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.